Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, former President Donald Trump will take a break from the courtroom to hold a rally in Wisconsin next week. Plus, why nursing home advocates are pushing back against the Biden administration's new staffing requirements. And we hear from both state party chairs about November's outlook and just how much money they predict will be spent. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for April 26.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Chair, we're first going to start with former President Donald Trump making his return to Wisconsin, and he's going to be holding a rally in Waukesha on Wednesday. And the significance of this visit is it comes after this is going to be expected to be his first rally since his criminal trial began in New York over hush money payments. Now, he is scheduled to speak at the Waukesha County Expo Center, where he is, quote, contrasting the peace and prosperity of security of his first term with Joe Biden's failed presidency. That's a quote from his campaign. And this trip is not only significant because Trump is going to be leaving the courtroom, which he's been complaining about because it's really largely impacted him not being able to be on the campaign trail, but he's coming to an area, of course, that we know is very important to Republicans, which is the Wow counties. Mm-hmm.
So initially reaction from people, oh, it's Waukesha, of course, because that's where Republicans are bleeding support. So the president, former president was in Green Bay April 2nd. Now he's back here, so it must be to address Waukesha County. If you go back and look, in 2016, Ron Johnson won 68% of the vote in Waukesha County. This is before the Trump erosion began. Fast forward to 2022, and Tim Michaels, who lost statewide in 22 to Governor Evers, got less than 60% of the vote in Waukesha County. It's not that simple, though, people tell me. Reality is, Waukesha is an easy place to get in and out. The airport is an easy access. He's going to Michigan right after this. I think it's a 2 o'clock event for Trump in Waukesha, 6 o'clock in Michigan. Also, it's the market. We're going to talk about the puzzle off and on the course of this year. You know, Dane County is huge for Democrats. The numbers in Milwaukee, Green Bay, Wausau. Milwaukee is still the biggest media market in the state. It is the most important one for both Biden and Trump because of the people who live there. I mean, it's just the numbers. So the third thing about Trump going there, people tell me, is he wants a big crowd. So the trial, they take a break on Wednesdays. Now there's a hearing scheduled this coming Wednesday to talk about his possible contempt, I believe. But I'm not sure he's got to be there. But anyway, right. He wants a big crowd. They take breaks on Wednesdays from this trial for the judge to attend other business. He wants to be welcomed by a lot of people. This is an easy spot for people from Illinois, from Minnesota, the Trump fans who travel to find him, mm-hmm. to show up and have a big boost for his ego. Being in Waukesha.
Right, and the Biden administration is also trying to make a footprint in that area as well. Last individual who was there was First Lady Jill Biden. She was there talking about reproductive freedoms, and that was kind of the kickoff of this women's reproductive tour that her and Vice President Kamala Harris have been talking about. She was also in the Waukesha area.
I was going to say, 2 for Trump, 10 for Biden, 7 for Harris. We're going to see many more as the year goes on.
You took it out of my mouth. You stole the show there.
There's the number.
Because I think in total, there's been at least closest to a dozen visits between the Biden administration just this year compared to Trump, who's only at 2. But, you know, he largely points to a lot of these criminal charges that he's facing that's been holding up his campaign, specifically the one in New York. And there's many more to come. Like you mentioned, there's a big question mark whether the one on Wednesday will possibly interfere with the 2 visits that he wants to do here and in Michigan. Speaking of many, many visits, mm-hmm. We had the First Lady in La Crosse on Monday touting a new policy that would require new minimum staffing mandates on nursing homes while also continuing to ramp up her attacks against the former president for his views on abortion. Now, this event was held on the same day that Senator Ron Johnson also had a media availability with some reporters. And he also once again reiterated that he's advocated before is putting an abortion referendum before voters to decide when abortion should be banned here in the state. And he also floated a what some Democrats call a little bizarre idea is that he wants everyone in Wisconsin to see what abortions look like at every stage. I think he's just trying to, you know, speak to his point that he believes that Democrats are, quote unquote, extreme on their abortion views. Let's just hear from the Vice President and Senator Johnson on this issue real quick before we dive more into it.
What kind of country do we want to live in? And what we know is that, sadly, almost 2 years ago now, the highest court in our land took a constitutional right that had been recognized from the people of America, from the women of America. What I'm finding is that more and more people will openly agree that one does not have to abandon their faith or deeply held beliefs to agree the government should not be telling her what to do with her body.
We need to understand, first of all, what an abortion looks like at every stage of pregnancy. We've not had that discussion, which is why I recommended a referendum to ask that question. At what point does society have the responsibility to protect life? But leading up to that referendum, we should have an education campaign that describes what life looks like inside the womb at different stages, you know, what babies can experience when they're viable, but also as important as it would be, you know, what does an abortion look like? The extreme position on abortion is the one that Democrats hold, which is unrestricted up to the moment of birth.
What you heard from Senator Johnson is what we're also seeing in other Republican campaigns. I'm going to point to U.S. Senate candidate Eric Hovde, you know, carefully talking about the issue of abortion, given what happened during the 2022 midterms when it was a huge winning issue for Democrats. They're trying to say, you know, I don't know, let's just have the voters decide this. You know, it's something that we're seeing a little bit more often now. It's a kind of a strategy to kind of back away from some of their previous views on the issue.
And they're walking a fine line with the anti-abortion groups. We've seen a number of them unhappy with former President Trump because of his position of letting the states decide. That's causing them some issues. But with Kamala Harris, Vice President, in La Crosse, so we had the dual, you know, a formal or a official event with the White House and the campaign event. The campaign event all about abortion and reproductive rights. They're going to hammer that issue repeatedly. The statement from the Biden campaign about Trump visiting Wisconsin mocked him for falling asleep during the trial and hit him on Roe v. Wade and being proud of appointing the justices to overturn that decision. It's going to be a fight because Democrats need that enthusiasm. If you look at the top issues in Marquette poll from a couple weeks ago, we had immigration, the economy, immigration, and abortion. Democrats realize abortion is the one they're winning on right now, so they're going to hit them on it. For Republicans, it's that dance of how do you find the right language on that issue to try to not upset your base but also not offend swing voters. It's not an easy dance for them to do, but they feel like, to Ron Johnson's point, if they're talking about not whether it should be legal but when it should be legal, that's a better issue for them than what they're being dealt with right now.
Right. And the other issue that the vice president spoke about was a new minimum staffing requirement at nursing homes. This was a federal rule that was implemented. And what it would essentially do is kind of up the hours of certain staffing that have to spend time with patients in these nursing home facilities, and it would require a registered nurse to be on staff 24/7. The argument from the Biden administration is that, you know, there's not enough people in there taking care of our seniors, and this was kind of the backdrop of the COVID-19 pandemic because there was already strained staff. There was, unfortunately, a lot of incidents that happened. Not only were there deaths that occurred, and this is nationwide. I'm talking about not just in Wisconsin, but a lot of things that kind of shed a bad light on nursing homes, and they're already a struggling industry that has lost a lot of staff. They've struggled to retain staff. So I spoke to a lot of advocates who work in nursing homes, and they're actually really concerned with this rule, just given that they don't think they can meet some of these requirements because they're already a strained industry since the pandemic, and some fear that it could lead to a lot of closures, especially in rural areas, as rural areas, of course, always have a little bit more challenges than more populated areas in the state. So we'll see where that goes. And they're trying to voice their concerns now to possibly get some changes. It is just a proposed rule. It's going to take a few days to get implemented. Mm-hmm. All right. Now let's look into the outlook of the 2024 election, because both state chairs were at a Wiz Politics event on Thursday and talked, of course, about money and their efforts going forward to try to win this battleground state. So during that event, the chairs estimated that there would be hundreds of millions of dollars that get into political campaigns leading up to the November election. no surprise. But we have reached, we have broke some records here in Wisconsin with the state Supreme Court race being the most expensive in U.S. history 2 years ago. So they also didn't really offer specifics on that dollar amount. It was actually pretty funny watching them. They both didn't want to say, is it going to be $10 million? Is it tens of millions of dollars, et cetera? But they both agreed in the end that they're going to have to reach a broad swath of voters for this upcoming election because of how tight we've seen polling here in the battleground state. Let's just first hear from both of them on this issue, on getting out the vote efforts.
We have hundreds of thousands of those people out there, literally, of those people out there who haven't voted before. We know where they are, and we're going to go get them. As state chairman, it would be malpractice for me not to use every potential advantage we have on the books. We are not going to sit back and allow another party to take advantage of things that are legal and on the books. We aren't doing that.
We're going to have to show up everywhere. Democrats are organizing in some of the reddest, most rural parts of Wisconsin and finding Democrats who they didn't know were there, putting yard signs in their yards. And I know the Republicans will be doing the same. So even though there are some groups that are shifting more than others, I actually think whichever party neglects any part of the state is going to lose in November.
All right. So talking about this in the outlook of the 24 election, JR, you know, we know it's going to be a lot of money. We know they got a lot of strategies going forward. It's going to be interesting to see what other tricks, I guess, they can pull out to get voters to the polls this fall.
Yeah, a little tangent here, a little party news. Republicans, the National Committee Man and Committee Woman, are up for election in the May convention this year. Tom Schreibel, who's been the committee man since 2018, is not seeking a two-year term. We already have Brad Courtney, who was a former state GOP chair, who's going to run for that. Terry Dietrich, the Waukesha County GOP chair, is going to run. Nick Redinger, who is not going to seek re-election this fall, is talking about running, other kicking the tires. On the committee woman side, the vice chair of the Dane County GOP is going to challenge Mary Pat Krueger, longtime GOP activist. So a little excitement for a convention. It's also is an opportunity to see where the party is going in terms of the Trump effect. You know, Brad Courtney is running with the 100% support, he told me, of Scott Walker. Is the party going more of a Trump direction? Will either Terry Dietrich or somebody else kind of capture that Trump energy? Or we see more of the Scott Walker establishment, Paul Ryan type activists win out at convention in May. That'll be interesting to watch.
All right. We're going to get to some other news that happened this week at the state capitol. We're talking about more to close the prison in Green Bay. So advocates of closing the state prison urged lawmakers this week and Governor Tony Evers to agree on replacing the 126-year-old facility, arguing it's not safe for inmates or staff, and Wisconsin shouldn't sink any more money into repairing it. Now, the Green Bay Correctional Institute, which is located in Eloise, and the Waupun Correctional Institute are the state's two oldest prisons, both dating back to the 1800s. This is something we've talked about before. This was kind of a sense of them trying to get the attention of lawmakers. Let's first just hear from an advocate talking about the current conditions and the need to shut it down.
It is time for Green Bay Correctional Institution to close. The facility has exhausted its lifespan and cannot provide those inside with the tools necessary to navigate a return to society. It is unsafe for the guards, the individuals housed there, and the community where it resides. Numerous studies have shown that the facility is beyond repair. Lives are at stake. It is our leaders' responsibility to act now to stop this crisis from getting out of hand. While we all have different ideas of what future of the criminal justice system in Wisconsin looks like, it's clear where we need to start. Green Bay Correctional Institution must be closed for the good of Wisconsin.
So a lot of the issues that are not just happening at Green Bay, but like I mentioned, the Waupun, is due to staffing problems. This has also led to a lot of restrictions, you know, quote-unquote lockdowns that confine a lot of inmates to their cells almost 24 hours a day. Now, some of those lockdowns are easing, and as the weeks go by, the Governor Tony Evers' administration ordered that about a few months ago, but there's still families and advocates who say there's just too many issues that continue to happen inside these facilities.
So Governor Evers is talking about Green Bay specifically. Has said he's not going to just look at that by itself. He's looked at it holistically. Remember, Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake, the youth prisons in northern Wisconsin, there is a process going on right now to move those kids from that facility to a new one in Racine County that's going to open, I can't remember when, One in Milwaukee County is in progress, and also an expansion in Mendota and Dane County for females. That will clear out that facility, and then that's supposed to become a medium security adult prison. Evers has been saying, look, I'm not going to talk about Green Bay without thinking about the entire system, and that's going to open up more access, more beds in northern Wisconsin. We can possibly look at that as a possible solution. With this hearing, by the way, Jim Raffner, the Alawes president, just happy running for state senate. I'm sure it's a coincidence he brought his issue to the state capitol after announcing that, but he's running for the Green Bay seat that used to have Rob Coles, Eric Wimberger, and Andre Jacques all in it. Wimberger and Coles looked at the 2nd District. Coles is now going to retire because Wimberger's going to run for the 2nd District, so he's on the Republican candidate for the 30th, where Jamie Wall ran for Congress, 8th Congressional District, back in 2012 or 14, somewhere around there. So anyway, a little bit of a political angle to all this, and the big picture thing is Green Bay's not going to close anytime soon. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure this hearing by itself is going to create any change or any momentum in the Capitol as much as advocates want it to.
It's also a time where it's kind of quiet at the mm-hmm. state Capitol. So while this did get, you know, news attention, given it is a big issue, solution is still far, far away. All right, let's also move into another topic that happened this week at the state Capitol. But it was a little bit behind closed doors. The Joint Finance Committee, I should clarify, Republicans on the Budget Committee, blocked a plan that Governor Evers' administration put forth to how to spend millions of dollars from a legal settlement due to opioid manufacturers and distributors. Now, the committee has objected to these plans presented by the Department of Health Services 3 years in a row, but several other aspects of the plan have been adopted by lawmakers. So this has been kind of a longstanding issue at the Capitol. Like I said, I just pointed out, it's been going on for 3 years.
Look, Republicans fundamentally don't want to let Governor Evers and his administration do what it wants without changes. They want to put their fingerprint on everything that goes through financially the state. It's no different with this. Objections 3 years in a row. For the most part, if you look at what happened the last two times, DHS, Department of Health Services, got most of what it wanted.
Right.
There was a little bit of money redirected here. I think in 2022, it was like $30-some million as part of the plan. They changed less than $6 million of it. So there aren't huge changes, but there's a philosophical difference, people tell me, between Democrats and Republicans on how to address opioids. Democrats like more the idea of kind of prevention up front and treatment. Republicans mostly like the treatment and the law enforcement aspect. They're not as much into things you can't track, like prevention up front. They want things, Republicans, put into stuff you can track. You know, you can see actual evidence of it's working, essentially. So it's just a difference of agreement. Also, don't forget, this is for fiscal year 2025, which begins July 1st. So this money may be delayed a little bit, but it's not ready to go out the door anytime soon. There's still time for it to be done before that fiscal year begins and the money goes out.
Right, and we're talking about $750 million that they're going to have funding all the way until 2038. So it's a big chunk of change that they have, but it's going to be coming in increments as well. And this is, of course, due to a national lawsuit against pharmaceutical companies. And the Department of Health Services also released a plan that would only spend about $36 million. So we're still talking just about a little bit of that. And 70% of this money is supposed to funnel out to municipalities and local and counties as well. So definitely something that we'll see continue to be talked about for a while. Now we're going to shift on to Congress because a lot happened this week, to put it lightly. And we're going to go through kind of just a roll call vote because I think what was the most interesting thing about this foreign aid package, of course, there was also the TikTok ban. To clarify, it's not banning the app. It's just making that the Chinese government, ByteDance, who currently owns it, to sell it to a U.S. company. If you just look up this, I want to hold this graphic on the screen for a while because you're going to find some interesting votes because there's just some people voting for some aid, not the others. When it comes to the TikTok ban, that was split along party lines. I know the Senate is not on there, but Baldwin and Johnson was no on all of these for the foreign aid package and TikTok ban. Baldwin was a yes on the foreign aid package as well. So this is kind of just the storyline that we want to talk about here, JR, because it's really a lot of mixed votes, and we have to highlight, of course, it was Representative Mike Gallagher's last votes on the floor.
So remember, that way the House worked was they took four separate bills and did votes on them. They were automatically packaged into one bill for the Senate to take up. In the House process, Tom Tiffany was basically a no on all the aid. He's kind of America First type mentality about this stuff, wasn't on board. Gallagher joined with Moore and Pocan on the aid to Ukraine. The aid to Israel had some Dem no's because there are concerns about how that's put together and is there enough for Gaza and Palestine. So that's the kind of dynamic going through it. Then you get into the Senate, where Ron Johnson's been saying he's opposed to, well, he was unhappy with this version because there's no effort to address the border.
Right.
Well, there was a bill to address the border back in February, but rejected that too because it wasn't enough, essentially. And he said it spent too much of our grandchildren's future and was not good financially. So Republicans basically didn't get anything on the border, but still passed Ukraine, or helped pass Ukraine aid in the end. Not that he was very happy about that. Then Gallagher, his resignation took effect on Wednesday at 4 p.m. our time, 5 p.m. Eastern, opening up that seat. But because of the timing of his resignation, there will not be a special election to fill it. It'll just be filled in the fall for a term in January.
All right, let's get to stock picks this week. And rising this week, oh man, yeah. Rent.
Look,
no surprise.
Not
yeah.
just feeling the squeeze. So yeah. A new study found that Wisconsin, as a state as a whole, had the ninth highest increase in rate from March to March of this year, up to about $1,600 on average, a good increase of more than 6%. Milwaukee was the 10th highest, up to around $1,800, way more than I was paying 20 years ago before I bought my house, just, you know. But look, this is just a sign of the squeeze. I mean, things are more expensive, rent is going up. It's also politically a problem for Joe Biden. The more these prices go up, the more there's pressure on that inflation number, the harder it is for him to convince people, hey, the economy's doing great. There are lots of good things happening in the economy. But when you're paying more for rent and groceries and everything else, or your mortgage rate's, you know, up around 7%, it's not easy to buy into what he's selling.
Right, and it was the federal government just a few weeks ago that gave some people hope that we're going to try to lower interest rates twice this year. Now there's talk of that they can't do that anymore. Of course, this is a very diverse economy that changes happen all the time. Same with the marketplace as well. But it's going to be a constant challenge for the Biden administration to continue to sell to people that the economy is good and your wallet's doing great.
And the housing issue is not a short-term fix. It's a capacity issue. Look, there's stuff being built in Madison all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But statewide, we need more housing units to keep up with the growing demand for it. It's going to take a while to fix that issue.
Right, and it's hard to already build in an area. A lot of people want to live downtown or not too far from where they work. Now people are having to move out much farther, and I see they're building a lot more into forests, you know, more of the burbs of Madison to try and just build more capacity for people to even buy houses. All right, let's get to Mix this week, and this is a story that happened late Friday. Of course, always the Friday news dump famously here in Wisconsin, and it is about Janelle Branchen due to that ethics complaint that was filed against her.
So late Friday afternoon, the Walker County DA said she was not going to file a felony charge against Janelle Branchen because she did not have the required evidence to prove it in court. The reason, she said, was that the Ethics Commission based its allegation that Branchen was a central figure in a scheme to evade campaign contribution limits was based on tapes that were made by one-party authorization with the Adam Steen campaign catching Branchen on tape saying, okay, we're going basically devising how to funnel money from donors when exceed that cap on contributions to county parties up north. Money would go back to Adam Steen or be used for in-kind contributions. Those tapes, while they're legal to have a one-party authorization for a recording, can't be used in court. She said without that tape, you can't then prove Janelle Branchen's basically intent and other things. Now, in talking to insiders this week, there was like, this is a massive punt. There was no evidence from that letter that like a thorough investigation, like, did she talk to Janelle Branchen? Did she talk to the Adam Steen campaign workers? Did she talk to Adam Steen? Like, was there an effort to really investigate this? There was a feeling that maybe you just didn't want to deal with this whole issue. That said, now Janelle Branchen does not have to worry about a felony charge hanging over her head for a re-election this fall. Although she had not really announced what she was going to do until, voila, this week.
After this settled.
On Monday, she suggested that the Ethics Commission was trying to tarnish her reputation ahead of the fall. Then on Thursday, she announced she's going to run again. Okay, well, she's going to run against Dan Knodelman's primary. A couple of interesting things here. Number one, looking at this district, it's been redrawn from where it was before. But Joe Hendrick is a longtime GOP registering consultant. He took the communities in the new assembly district and overlaid it with the February primary, last year for the 8th Senate District. Remember, there's an opening for the 8th Senate District. Branchen and Knodel and a third candidate were running for that. So Hendrick took those results from February of 2023 and put them into this new district. Looking at that seat by itself, Knodel beat Branchen almost 2-1. So, okay, there's a red flag there for Branchen. Number two, where's she getting her money from?
looking at last year, again, that Senate race, Dan Quinella outraised her 3-1 in the period before the primary. So where's Branchen go? Well, one, I'm talking to people. Their theory is that Robin Voss is not a big fan of Janelle Branchen, as we all know. They've had a contentious relationship. Voss appointed her chair of the Elections Committee for the 21-22 session. She then used as a platform to espouse various conspiracies about the 2020 election. Voss won his primary in 2022 that she backed his opponent, won re-election, then pulled her off that committee shortly thereafter. He's got an interest next session in trying to limit the number of people who are problems. And I use that quotation marks, right. Problems for Robin Voss, because we know from the maps there should be fewer Republicans we have right now. They're better seats for Democrats. Now, what that number is, I don't know. But let's say it's Republicans coming back with 54 seats, okay? If you have four problems, you're okay. You can still get a bill passed. If you have five, now you're talking the same things you want the House of Representatives and Congress right out in Washington, D.C. right now, where how do you get a Janelle Branchen, Elijah Behnke, Scott Allen, Chuck Wickers, people who have been thorns in your side at times, to go with the team to pass something big? It could be a challenge. So the theory is that Robin Voss and or his friends, the groups who support him, will help Dan Quinella's primary. Where does Janelle Branchen go? Well, she's got the Mike Lindells of the world who are big fans of hers. Donald Trump, you know, spoke at a rally with her for Adam Steen in 2022. Does she get money from those folks? Maybe. Does Trump endorse her? Maybe. But where does she find the money to make that matter? Looking at campaigns, groups like Americans for Prosperity, they do drop lit, they do doors, they pick candidates that they like and they go out and support them. You have to either be really organized by yourself or have groups like that helping you to win elections. It's just the way it works. So she's got this red flag of where is the money and infrastructure going to come to help her in a seat where she's already starting at a disadvantage to Dan Quinella, is what happened last year.
I think you made a good point, too. Of course, we know money flows a lot on campaigns. Yes. You need it. But Dan Quinella, too, is also a big fan of impeaching Megan Wolf, wants to see those articles of impeachment. So it's kind of still in that lane where Voss is trying to walk away from. So it'll be interesting to see with that Trump endorsement, where does Trump go? Of course, he's been a huge fan of Janelle Branchen, but I think it might be something that Quinella might also fight for as well in the future.
No moderate, but
right.
He's a team player. There's a difference between the two of them that way, which Voss can say, okay, I can work with one, but not the other.
All right. And following this week, real quickly, is prison guard vacancy rates. Some good news.
So at that Green Bay hearing this week, I was kind of curious about the rates. There was a pay plan that kicked in the fall, and the years folks have been talking about, this is going to really help us a great deal. Well, it did. The vacancy rate in August of last year was 35% statewide. It dropped to 18% as the close of the last pay period this month. Huge difference. And what is it? It's the pay has increased. They've had two big classes of guards go through the academy that have graduated. They're now into the system. That has helped a great deal. There's one tough nut to crack, though. That's Waupun. We've talked about Waupun before. It's this kind of oddly placed prison in terms of, like, drawing a workforce. Waupun's, what, 20, 25 minutes from Fond du Lac, the same from Beaver Dam, about 20-ish. You don't have the people, some people argue, to draw enough to staff the prison. The vacancy rate is 52%. It's still more than half. So, and that's even at $41 an hour. Now, the starting rate for prison guards was $20 an hour. They boosted it to $33. If you're in a facility that's a maximum security, you get an add-on. If the vacancy rate's above 40%, another add-on, that's $41 an hour to start at Waupun. So the idea is, okay, they just can't recruit people. I talked to Ron Bishop, the mayor of Waupun, said, look, it's not just that. We have a housing crunch. Back to our first topic, the stock report.
There we go, yeah.
We don't have enough places for people to live. And it's a drive from other places to come here to work. So he needs more capacity in Waupun to get people in to Ripon to work at a place.
All right. Well, that will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Bannon.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.